Welcome back again to BadQuaker.com podcast. This is podcast number 96 for Monday, February 6th, 2012. I'm Ben.
I'm Kai.
You would think I would be able to remember that because I just read it and said it out loud right before starting the podcast so that I'd be able to say it in a smooth and professional way.
We're not going to have another brain damage podcast, are we?
Hey, we referred to the brain damage podcast last time, one of the times last week. Sometime last week. I don't know. I have brain damage. I don't know. I have an excuse. It's a wonderful excuse. I can put this excuse on anything. I'm sorry, officer. I have brain damage.
At some point, you should probably explain your brain damage, because you've mentioned you have brain damage on several...
I think it's quite obvious. Speaking of old episodes or old podcasts, I do want to thank a commenter, Ryan. I'll just say his first name, Ryan. But Ryan commented on our, what was the name of that podcast? The Alien Lizard Mutant Overlord podcast, where we talked about different conspiracy theories and so forth like that. And if you haven't read it, go over to badquaker.com and click on the page. Just scroll down till you see the Alien Lizard Mutant Overlord podcast and click on that link. And then scroll down to the bottom and you can see the comments and you can read Ryan's comments there. He did a real nice job of talking about his experiences there. And also he complimented Kai.
Yay! Also, we wanted to mention that... Wow, this is appearing Monday. We are actually time traveling.
Yeah.
And we're recording this from the past. So we're recording this Sunday.
Yeah, during the copyright infringement Super Bowl in copyright infringement. We're recording this in a house where the Super Bowl is being viewed in multiple rooms with multiple audiences, and so there may be random shouts of glee or moans of agony at any particular time.
Or dogs barking.
Or dogs barking. We have banned Baggy from the studio at this moment, although she may come up and start demanding
entrance. May start scratching on the door because she doesn't like it too much when you try to do things behind her back.
She doesn't like doors to be closed. She likes to have doors open so that she can roam from room to room. One of the things on the internet here of late, and really this is not new, it's a few years old, but the mainstream media is starting to catch on to it, you know, as always, it's a few years after.
Wait, somebody said something.
Did you know there's a thing called a search engine? You can just, it's called Google, and you can just put words in there.
No, that gives them too much credit. It's called Bing. Thanks, Grandpa.
Anyway, there's this picture that's starting to circulate in the mainstream media now. It's not a picture, it's a painting. Where the artist depicts all of the presidents in the history of the U.S. And the White House is in the background. And the foreground, there's this lonely guy sitting on a park bench looking down, and he's all full of sorrow, and he's hopeless. So, you know, it's portraying him as being in that situation. And all the presidents are portrayed, and Obama is standing in the forefront with literally standing on with his foot on the Constitution, and it's saying, you know, that he's trampling on our rights and trampling on the Constitution. And then Madison is behind him with his hands outstretched like, what are you doing? Don't touch the Holy Constitution. And Washington and Jefferson and Ronald Reagan and
Lincoln.
And Lincoln. Now, let me just go through that lineup again. George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and Adams is right behind them. Adams and Jefferson are almost shoulder to shoulder. That would be fun. Adams was the guy who would have thrown Jefferson in jail given the opportunity. Reagan and Lincoln are all huddled around the guy on the bench in sorrow that, look, how can you let this man be going through this? And while Madison is over upset about the Constitution. And then behind Obama, Bush is kind of standing there with his arms crossed, and he seems to be torn between the two. He's looking over at Washington like, hey, who are you?
So at least they got that right.
And next to him is Clinton, and Clinton appears a little joyful, like, yeah, you know, like, oh boy. And right beside Clinton, my Midwestern started leaking out there by pluralizing everything. We're going to head on down to the Walmarts. Anyways. So right next to Clinton is standing FDR. FDR's okay. Standing there.
I will have you people know that FDR never walked all over the Constitution. He never walked on anyone's rights.
And then Teddy Roosevelt is over there too, and he's, and so, you know, I hate to say it, but, and this is a very popular painting, even among libertarians. There are libertarians that are very gleeful that this painting is getting all this attention, but the problem is, this is essentially more state worship. Mm-hmm. This is essentially more, you know, oh, if we could only have the Constitution. And here's Washington, a guy who, there's no indication any way he was ever concerned about the downtrodden or the poor, mm-hmm. you know, and there's certainly no indication he cared about the Constitution.
He certainly wasn't caring about poor, Pennsylvania whiskey makers.
Yeah, when he brought the army down on them.
Yeah.
Marched the army on American citizens.
He didn't care about poor farmers who had voluntarily joined up with the American militia when he starved them to death during the winter.
Yeah, under the threat, okay, if you leave and go back to your farms, we'll shoot you.
Yeah.
So you have to stay here without shoes and march in the snow. Well, this crazy fake German, Baron. He was a fake Baron, I believe. Yeah, Baron von Steuben. And von is actually like a knighted title. Mm-hmm. And he was a fake. He was not a Baron, and he had not been knighted.
He's a Baron the way that Lady Gaga is a lady.
Yeah. Is that... That's some kind of gender joke, isn't it?
Actually, no, that one wasn't.
That is not a gender joke. That's the fact that she's not a... The stupid internet. Oh, all right. I'm gonna name names. Time Warner Cable stinks.
Uh-huh.
And their customer service stinks.
Uh-huh.
And I can't wait to get to a place where I have a choice and I don't have to use Time Warner Cable. Mm-hmm. Anyway, enough corporate bashing. We don't want to upset any of our corporate sponsors. Like we have corporate sponsors. Hey, I kind of sounded like Michael W. Dean. I could do a Michael W. Dean imitation. Did you hear that? Corporate sponsor. No, I'm not picking on Michael W. Dean. It just, you know, if you listen to somebody enough, you start to pick up their accent uh-huh. and their mannerisms in your speech. And so I've been, like, pounding in all these Freedom Fiends podcasts to see what those guys are talking about over there. And I catch myself every now and then using a Freedom Fiend terminology. Like, next thing I know, I'm going to start talking about, what do they say, don't drone me, bro? Have you heard that one?
No, I haven't heard that one. I had that issue when I was working the Renaissance festivals because, you know, you go from... Mm-hmm. from state to state to state, and every yeah. state has their own little local dialect, and mm-hmm. and in order to sell more,
you kind of have to sound like a local,
right? You know, mm-hmm. you sell more in the South if you have a Southern accent, and mm-hmm. you don't sell more in New York if you have a Southern accent. They won't buy from you if you have a Southern accent in New York.
You sound funny.
You're one of them foreigners, so. You have to adopt. So over the years, I've gotten this habit of whoever I'm around, I slip into their accent
mm-hmm.
and That's kind of, it's not really appropriate if you're not trying to sell them things.
Well, that's partially, you know, because of what you just now said, but also partially because the way, you know, we moved around mm-hmm. so much throughout the years.
Yeah, I remember when we moved from, because we lived in California, and then we moved to Ohio, and I picked up an Ohio accent, mm-hmm. and then we moved back to Nevada. Well, not back, we moved to Nevada. And I went to public school for like a minute, and I got really teased because of mm-hmm. the accent that I picked up, and I think it was at that point that I was like, okay, then I will not talk with an accent anymore, and sort of I really like mm-hmm. forced the accent out of my voice at that point.
We should probably, in case we have new listeners, because we're always having new listeners, we should probably give at least a little bit of an indication mm-hmm. who we are. Maybe not a whole 45-minute introduction, but I'm Ben, and Kai, my co-host, is also my daughter, and to Yay. Our knowledge, we are the only father-daughter anarchist podcast team on the internet or the radio.
True.
And we are on the radio on LRN.FM, the Liberty Radio Network. We'll give them a little plug. We haven't given the Liberty Radio Network a plug in a while. Mm-hmm. So if you're not familiar, if you're listening to us and you're not familiar with the Liberty Radio Network, that's weird.
You're weird.
What is wrong with you, you freak? No. No, the Liberty Radio Network is sort of a outcropping of the New Hampshire Liberty mm-hmm. activity that's going on, because it's run by guys up there that are involved in that. But it's a little bit bigger than that. They have radio shows and podcasts from all over the place, and they kind of bring them all together and then rebroadcast them on the Liberty Radio Network, and they have... Oh, I'm not sure how many affiliates. I think Baggy's trying to get in. For the new listeners, Baggy is the cat.
Yeah, now joined by Nikki the dog with her very loud jewelry that I'm going to attempt to take off if she will stop wiggling. Stop wiggling. I need to take off your slave collar. Your state-enforced slave collar.
Okay, Nikki. So, what just happened was... we have Baggy the cat and we have Nikki the dog.
Those are the inside animals.
Yeah. And then the outside is the boys protecting the property. Nikki decided that she was tired of watching the super game. Do we dare just like...
Yeah, we can say Super Bowl.
Super Bowl, Super Bowl. Sue me, Super Bowl. Anyway, so Nikki got tired of watching
it's the It's not like saying Urban Homestead.
Oh, no. That's an instant.
Are they still doing that? Are they still around? I think they've backed down.
I think they took so much heat that they backed down a little bit.
I haven't heard anything about them in months.
They took a lot of heat over that ridiculous nonsense. There's a, for anybody that doesn't know what we're talking about, there's a group of... healthy food advocates who down in Southern California who were growing their own food on their own little lot in town. Mm-hmm. And they were doing quite well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they had
very impressive.
And they had a lot of followers because, mm-hmm. you know, they were doing a lot of
innovation, innovative techniques. Mm-hmm. And they were really doing some neat stuff. But then they got a, first off, I think it was the Discovery Channel did a special on them. And that kind of went to their head, and so they tried to copyright common phrases that are in the home gardening thing, like mm-hmm. like urban homestead. The phrase urban homestead has been used for like 40 years or something like that. And they attempted to copyright these phrases.
Which is interesting because they're not an urban homestead. They're not urban.
No,
they're suburban.
Yeah, they're in the suburbs in Southern California.
This kind of gets me a lot of, you know, pretty much any time you see to anyone who, I am an urban homestead. I bet you don't.
Yeah.
I bet you have a suburban homestead because having an urban homestead is really hard.
Yeah, that...
You know, I know I have an apartment with no outside space at all, and you can't grow anything. You know, if I wanted to spend massive amounts of money on electricity, I could put grow lights up. But then I would get raided by the DEA, and I don't want to do that.
Well, what are you growing?
I can pretty much grow bacteria in my house.
Yeah. Well, I kind of worry about that, because I have here in my office, I have two very, well, I don't know if you call them healthy or not, but they're doing okay for winter. They're like almost, well, I'll say 2.5 feet tall, two and a half feet tall pepper plants that I brought in from outside before the bad part of the winter hit. Because most people don't realize that peppers will grow year-round if they're in the right environment. Mm-hmm. So I brought them in, and I'm growing them here in my office in the window.
Because they're in a container.
Yeah, they're in a container, and they're growing in the window.
That sounds so nice. You're container gardening. Yes. You're not growing peppers in a 5-gallon bucket.
But I also have a grow light to supplement the, because Ohio winters, even next to the window, you don't get a lot of light sometimes. Mm-hmm. So I have a grow light to supplement the sunlight. And I kind of halfway expect some goofy neighbor to call up somebody and, you know, I'm halfway expecting the door to come busting in, coming after my pepper plants, you know. Oh boy, way to go there, Deputy Fife. You really solved the crime of the century this time, didn't you? Mm-hmm. Anyway, boy, we're way off track.
So, none of which is what we meant to talk about today.
So we were introducing ourselves, talking about accents, and that we're the only father-daughter anarchist podcasting team on the internet and radio. And we talked about a little bit about the LRN, and what else were we talking about there before Nikki showed up and decided she had to interrupt us?
I think our original point was we were talking about this painting.
Oh,
I think we had started there, and then gotten sidetracked.
Then we got sidetracked.
Began following Will o' the Wisps.
Yeah. Well, that's because of the whole brain damage issue.
Right.
We wandered into the brain damage issue and then off into the stars.
Right.
Well, my criticism of this picture, as I said earlier, is that it falls into this basic status trap, this idea that, you know, if we could just return to the Constitution, everything was great under the Constitution. Hi, Baggy. Okay, so everybody's joining the party. Baggy's here. Nikki's here. Baggy's giving us the look.
Like, you're doing something and you're keeping it from me.
Okay, so anyway, my problem with this picture is, as I said, it's the basic status mythology that...
And I feel so bad. I feel so bad because it seems like the last couple of podcasts we've done nothing but bash constitutionalists. And I think mostly because, you know, if you have somebody that you don't know who is a drug dealer or whatever, a drug user, it's kind of like, well, yeah, that's bad, but it doesn't affect you.
Right.
You know, but if you have somebody that you love, you know, if your family member or a close friend is into these things, then you kind of attack them more because you want so badly for them to just come to their senses, you know.
And that really is the key between anarcho-capitalists and libertarians. Mm-hmm. The anarcho-capitalists look at the libertarians and we say, you know, you guys are so close. Mm-hmm. You have, like, you have all the hand. That would be the NFL. you have all the pieces of the puzzle are in front of you. All the cards are laid out for you to see. And yet, you've got that one piece of the puzzle in your hand. The whole rest of the puzzle is assembled. And you're holding that one last piece of the puzzle, and you're like, I just don't see how it can fit. Mm-hmm. But all you have to do is put it down. Mm-hmm. And just put it down. Mm-hmm. And we're like that person standing there, you know, behind a glass where we can't reach out and help you. But we're like, just put it down. Why do you not see this? Bag is going to attempt to pull down.
There may be loudness that is just about to happen.
In one episode of our podcast, Baggy decided to wander into the bathroom and jump up on a towel shelves and she actually fell in the toilet, which was quite traumatic for her. But now she's starting to crawl under something.
I don't understand cats' fascination with sticking their head in places. Like, I don't know what's in there. I'm going to stick my head in there.
How can that fit a Darwinian?
Yeah, that doesn't seem evolutionary good. Now, it may be that that's because humans have bred them to the point where they're stupid.
Yeah, well, that's possible.
Now Nikki's looking at, like, how did you do that? Because Nikki has no ability to flatten herself out like a cat.
Yeah, Baggy just slid underneath a set of shelves and slithered away. And Nikki's like, I don't know. We're the same size, but I'm not that flexible.
That's magic. So anyway, I apologize to constitutionalists if it seems like we're constantly beating you up.
Yeah.
We do it because we love you. And we just want you to be better.
Yeah, you're like that part of the family that we're just so close to having your life straightened out, but you just can't put down that one addiction.
Yeah,
and it's like, you know, if you could just we want to have an intervention. We want to sit you down and say, look, I know you think this Constitution thing is important, but it's destroying your life.
You need to stop hanging around that crowd.
Yeah, if you could just get away, put the Republicans down. Move away from the Republicans. They're not your friends. I don't care what they tell you. And the Democrats are worse.
They don't care about you.
Oh, my. So, now that we've offended 80% of our audience.
Right.
Oh, well. Not the first time on that one, huh?
Won't be the last.
You know, let's get into something we can all get behind and beat up. Because if there's anything that we have in common with libertarians and anarcho-capitalists and anarchists and anarcho-socialists and even conservatives to a certain extent, there's one thing that's universally hated, and that's a traffic ticket. So I was looking around, and let me see if the Time Warner cable...
Crawling through the internet.
Yeah, if Time Warner cable will let me pull up a web page here. San Francisco Chronicle has a story where, let's see, they're talking about red light cameras. The headline is, red light cameras boost coffers, rile drivers. Well, not enough. And so the story talks about this one red light camera in Oakland, California, that generates $3 million a year. One camera generates $3 million a year.
How did the citizens of Oakland not
baseball bat
throw up baseball with it?
I don't know. Baseball bat. I don't know how anybody could just...
piece of black tape?
Yeah. Was it in Phoenix, I think? Do you know that group? Is it 4411? Is that... Am I right? I may have to trim this out.
I have no idea.
No, it's not 4411. I can't remember the name of the group, but it's their named numbers. They're isn't that terrible?
Stinking numbers. There's too many of them.
I'll if I can remember to do this, I will put a link to their YouTube page on the page where this appears at badquaker.com. But anyway, a few years ago, I'm pretty sure they're in Phoenix. They had a campaign against the red light cameras. Mm-hmm. And their campaign was to go out and put bags over the cameras. Now, they didn't actually damage any property, so mm-hmm. they couldn't be charged with damaging property. Mm-hmm. But it cost quite a bit of money. You see, when volunteers go out with a bag mm-hmm. and shove it over a camera, that costs a bag. But for a city to go around and find, then remove the bags from the cameras is really expensive. Mm-hmm. So when you battle a war like this, first off, what we're talking about is civil disobedience, but we're talking about it civil disobedience in a way that's not going to convince the community that you're crazy mm-hmm. and you need to be hunted down and killed.
Mm-hmm. Because it's nonviolent.
Exactly. And if you can pull off civil disobedience and keep the public positive about what you're doing, you win. Mm-hmm. The state cannot battle that. Mm-hmm. This is a problem with, let's say, in the 1800s, the James gang and the Younger gang, and James gang were working in Missouri primarily, and they would branch out and strike at banks and railroads. And the banks and the railroads were the enemy of the common man in Missouri in the 1800s. So they could then fold back into the communities because they weren't robbing their neighbors. They weren't doing anything against their neighbors.
This is the same, what was that bank robber in Chicago that they ended up capturing because his girlfriend turned him in, or his girlfriend's mother turned him in?
You're thinking about Dillinger.
Dillinger.
His girlfriend's mother, they actually put her under some undue pressure because she was an immigrant, and they threatened to deport her if she didn't, give up the boyfriend. Mm-hmm. And so she did, and they deported her anyway, you know, because the government lies.
That's what they do.
Yeah. But, he would do the same thing. He would rob... and then he would rob the people that the citizenry felt were their enemies. Mm-hmm. And then he would take that money and like a Robin Hood type, he wouldn't just give it away, but he would spend it lavishly. And he was friends with everybody. Mm-hmm. And then he was being selective about who he would rob.
Right.
Now, in both of these cases, there was violence. And these people were bad people. But they were able to keep the community on their side, because they were fighting the common enemy. And I think almost that's what the Occupy people were doing. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of sympathy for the Occupy people. But yet at the same time, you know, when they plug up city streets and stuff, they get a lot of hatred toward them. And there's a lot of people who just see it as an excuse for a bunch of lazy hippies to go live in a park for 6 months or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so they don't get the kind of sympathy that other people...
If hippies want to go live in parks for months at a time, just be a Rennie.
Well, that's the problem. They're not capitalists.
Oh, that's right. Well, and not only that, but it's becoming less and less lucrative with the economy to be a traveling salesperson of any sort.
So this group in, I'm pretty sure it was Phoenix, that were just going around and, you know, putting bags over the traffic cameras. Drinking during a podcast, are we?
I am. Horrible, horrible substances, too.
Oh, no, that's a soda, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a soda.
Oh, my. Or for some of our listeners.
It's pop.
It's a pop. Or a Coke. Oh. In some areas, it's Coke, even if it's Mountain Dew.
Uh-huh.
that was not product placement, by the way. We don't get any money from any of these clowns.
If, however, they want to give us money.
This is the All Coke podcast. No. I don't think I would, actually. I don't think I would take a sponsorship from somebody like that.
Dr. Pepper, maybe.
I don't know, you know. You know, it's easy to be noble when nobody's waving cash in front of your nose.
Right.
When the sponsors start waving the cash, it becomes a whole lot more difficult to remember your... You know, no, I am not for a corporation. Anyway, so Oakland, $3 million a year.
A really hard time staying on task here today.
Focus. In Oakland, they have this one camera that's generating $3 million a year in fines.
And that's what they do. The street cameras don't prevent... You know, they're not there for safety. They're not there for protecting the community. They're not there to, you know, in any way, shape, or form make people be better drivers.
No,
they're
there
to collect cash from the population. That's all they do.
The economist recognizes this as rent-seeking. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. It's an illegitimate way of collecting funds without actually working.
Right. You
know? It's actually a net... drain on the economy. It causes more harm than good in the long run. So that's the economist recognizes that right away as being rent seeking. Now, and this is not, they don't just have the one camera in all of Oakland. They have cameras all over.
Right.
But just as an example for this story in the San Francisco Chronicle?
Yeah.
They just picked out this, San Francisco Chronicle. They just picked out football. They just picked out this one camera, and one camera makes $3 million a year.
Yeah.
Now,
and yet, they're strapped for cash.
Yeah, and they will be, because it's a never ending loop. It doesn't matter how much they draw in; they'll always spend more than they draw.
Yeah.
So, now. And we were making the comparison between how Oakland is dealing with this and how Phoenix has dealt with it. Now, they had, for a while, they had the traffic light cameras in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And the last I heard on that, there was a group that was complaining about it to the point of where the city was agreeing to take them down. Because what they were finding in Los Angeles was that the city would not only put up the cameras and then fine the drivers, the city was also tweaking the lights so that they would have shorter yellow lights. And this was actually causing more accidents because the lights were cutting short and they weren't what the people were expecting. If there's anything in traffic that causes more accidents than anything else, it's unpredictable behavior. So when an intersection or a red light or something becomes unpredictable, that makes it far more dangerous.
Right. Actually, they've done specific studies about this in, I want to say Denmark, but that could be wrong, where they've taken all, not only all traffic lights, but all traffic markers of any kind out of the streets, all stop signs, all lines on the road, everything. And what they found is that actually decreases the number of accidents.
There's one town in England moving around there trying to get some of the noise settled down from the football. There's one town in England that has tried this on a couple of intersections.
Apparently someone scored a home run or...
They got the ball through the basket.
Yeah, they got the ball through the basket and they scored a home run doing that.
We're intentionally being ignorant of the NFL and the Super Bowl. I don't have anything against the Super Bowl or NFL or anything else. It just the problem with that is the problem with that picture we were talking about earlier, is that if all you can see is the team aspect, you know, it's the Republican team, it's the Democratic team, these are the good presidents, those are the bad presidents.
And the, you know, it's just as illogical to pick out a favorite football team as it is to pick out a favorite political party.
Yeah, it's about the same. You know, let me pick on NASCAR for a little while, because I don't think I've actually picked on NASCAR in our podcasts.
Oh, who knows?
There was a day when a company like Ford would supply an engine and a body to somebody who they were sponsoring. And over the course of a season, they might provide that driver, that team, with maybe two bodies and maybe four engines to get them through a season. Oftentimes, though, one body was all you got. Mm-hmm. You might get two or three engines, but the factories wouldn't supply a whole lot more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And for that, you got to drive that brand name, and you got to maybe have their logo on your car, and then you sold other sponsorships for other things. Like if you needed oil for your car, you sold the sponsorship to a particular oil company, and they supplied the oil for your car, plus paid you a little bit. And this is how NASCAR worked. But at some point in time, this desire to level the playing field and take away any possibilities of one manufacturer having an advantage over the other manufacturer, and this drift toward corporate socialism, really, in this sport.
Oh, I like that terminology. Corporate socialism.
Corporate socialism.
I like that.
And the, what was the other thing I said about it? Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Brain damage.
Eventually they started saying, okay, well, you can only tune the engines like this, or you can only have this style of intakes, or you can only do this with the exhaust. And they kept restricting and restricting and restricting, trying to get the engine packages identical with each other for no particular logical reason, because you should be competing, which means that you want the best out there winning.
Right.
But that's not what they wanted. Right. So eventually it got to the point of where NASCAR is not a stock car race anymore. Mm-mm. It used to be stock car. In other words, when you saw a guy in 1968 racing a Firebird, it was a Firebird.
Right.
Or if another guy there was racing a Mercury
stock
Cyclone.
That's what stock car means. Yeah. You know, it's a stock model of their car.
Yeah, souped up.
Yeah.
If he was racing a Cyclone, then it was a Mercury Cyclone with a Ford engine, and, you know, that's what it was.
They have tweaked and uh-huh. you know, even maybe pulled stuff out of to make it lighter or whatever, mm-hmm. but it starts out with that car.
Yeah. Nowadays, a frame shop uses steel tubing, not like what's on regular automobiles, mm-hmm. and they make this tubing frame, and they're all standardized.
Mm-hmm.
And then they put a fake thin... fake veneer on it, mm-hmm. to give it the basic shape of a production vehicle of one of the Ford, Chrysler, or GM brands.
They don't even try to make it look unique. I mean, you look at the NASCAR cars, and mm-hmm. they all look exactly the same.
Well, they all have the same flavor.
Yeah, you know.
And then, mm-hmm. I'm not sure who the engine manufacturer is, but they all run the exact same engine.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe, I could be wrong on this, but I believe all the engines are manufactured by a GM subsidiary. I could be wrong on that, but I believe all the NASCAR engines are manufactured by the same GM subsidiary. Now, this is funny because you have these Ford fanatics and you have these Chrysler fanatics and you have these different GM fanatics, mm-hmm. you know. And they are really hyper-fanatic about their brand.
And it's not, you know, you can say, okay, well, now it's just an issue of the driver.
Yeah.
You know, the driver's skill is the only thing that you're testing in this. Mm-hmm. But they're not, I mean, there are some that are loyal to the drivers. Mm-hmm. But they have specific, you know, I'm a Ford fan. I'm a GM fan.
Reality.
No, you're not, dude. They're all the same.
When in reality, it's all the same.
Mm-hmm.
It's all a facade. That's not saying that watching a NASCAR race is not fun. It's actually pretty exciting to see in real life. Mm-hmm. I mean, your chest just shakes as those cars go racing by. It's quite an experience.
It takes forever, though.
They are a bit long. That's the nice thing about drag races.
Like 4 or 5 loops around the track would be awesome. You know? Like, really? 100 loops? 500 loops? Really? Drag racing is nice because, you know, it's...
Yeah.
20 seconds of all out. But you don't see a lot of crashes in drag racing.
When you do, though, they're spectacular. You know, it's like wiping out the stands and stuff.
I liked, you see the old footage of them, like, across the desert, like the Bonneville Flats, where they're just, like, going way faster than any human being should ever travel, ever.
Yeah. I have to throw this in since we're talking about racing. The first time that I was ever at a real drag race, I was at lots of little drag races because my dad used to race stock cars back in the olden days, and he had a garage and he had a Ford dealership, and we were always around race cars of some kind, you know. But the first time I was around real Top Fuel dragsters was in Paducah, Kentucky. At the, I believe it was the Summer Nationals that year were in Paducah, Kentucky. Or, no, not Paducah, Bowling Green.
That always confuses me, because there's a Bowling Green, Kentucky, and there's a Bowling Green, Ohio.
Well,
I always get confused, because I've driven through Bowling Green, Kentucky, mm-hmm. so many times, and there's a college in Bowling Green, Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I hear people, oh, I'm going to Bowling Green, and I'm like, that's like, 3 hours away. More than that. It's like 5 hours away. What are you doing going to Bowling Green, Ohio? That's like saying, I'm going to Las Vegas. What? No, Las Vegas, Michigan. Or Paris. I'm going to Paris. No, Paris, Kentucky.
Not Paducah. Not Paducah. Bowling Green. So I was like 11, 12 years old, something like that. Maybe 13. I might have been 13. I think it was around 12, though. And we were in Bowling Green, Kentucky, when they had the Summer Nationals. So you had the big races like Don Prudhomme and the guys in those days who were the top fuel dragster races. And I'm just a kid wandering around, and I knew no rules as to where you could and couldn't wander. When I was 12 years old,
does it matter?
Yeah, my feet just went where they wanted to go, and my brain was just watching the show. Hey, that rhymed. So I ended up like wandering around the pits and stuff, and just walking around in there. When it came race time, and they started firing up the dragsters for real. I mean, you'd hear them as they were tuning them up and playing with them and stuff. But when they got their main cars out, and they had a number of earlier races mm-hmm. that were going on the track itself. But when they started wheeling out the top fuel dragsters and lining them up, and they started doing their burnouts and warming up and everything like that, it was indescribable. And experiencing that, I can understand why a person can be a lifetime race fanatic mm-hmm. because the level of adrenaline just watching mm-hmm. is unbelievable. You don't have to see a wreck. You don't even have to know who wins. It's just an experience that is amazing. And it's the thunder mm-hmm. that's in every cell of your being, and the smell and the lights and all the sensations.
It's like going to a rock concert.
Very much. Yeah. Yeah,
it's not, the rock concert is not about the music that's playing.
I have been to really, really bad rock concerts that were tremendously fun. Mm-hmm.
I personally think if I were going to watch any race, I would like to see motorcycle racing.
Oh, yeah. That's fun. I loved that. Back in the olden days when we used to have open desert racing, it was great. You get 500 bikes just lined up in a row, almost handlebars touching, and you've got like 300 yards into a bottleneck and a turn that only two bikes can get around at once, mm-hmm. and they all fire off at once, and to my knowledge, they don't do that anymore, but it was amazing. My brother almost died in one of those, but that's a different story.
It's fun because when you see a wreck in mm-hmm. in car racing, you know, there's a lot of car and metal and flames.
Very dramatic.
But when you see a wreck in motorcycle racing, you just have this guy who's just like bouncing around all over the place and sprawled around.
Yeah,
and you're like, how in the world does a human being do that? And then they just stand up and run over to their bike and pick it back up and go off again.
Until you get up in your 50s and then you're like me, wandering around, having to use a cane so the dog on the leash doesn't pull you over.
Well, and, you know, the motorcycle is still going.
Yeah.
You know, with a car, when you wreck a car, the car stops. Mm-hmm. But a motorcycle really doesn't. It just keeps going.
Especially a dirt bike. They can really do some acrobatic moves once you are no longer in the saddle. But I think we wandered again. So we've wandered around so much that this may not be a usable podcast. This may just be the the blithering, wandering, nonsense, no topic podcast. But I think the point I was trying to make by slamming NASCAR and everything is that there's this desire to support your team. Mm-hmm. And it can be taken to the point of where even if there's absolutely no difference in the teams, people are still willing to go to fists mm-hmm. over the difference between their teams,
and
even
is,
when there's no difference.
This is something that human beings have, mm-hmm. and they have. I mean, it's not just human beings. It's any herd-type animal.
Yeah, or pack.
It's this ingrained, instinctual, mm-hmm. rabid need to protect your pack mm-hmm. against other packs.
Yeah.
You know, and there's no real, because this is so instinctual, mm-hmm. it's really hard to not fall into that pattern.
And what we have seen very vividly displayed is that the state has figured that out mm-hmm. and plays on it. That's why you always have, whether they're labeled Democrat or Republican is not the point. Democrat or Republican is not the point. You always have this parties against each other, but nothing really matters.
And it's interesting because one of the very first things that a state does when they begin to control the population is they begin to break the family unit.
Yeah.
They take children away from mm-hmm. parents. They like to split parents up. They like to make the family dependent on the state.
Mm-hmm.
And they do this so that you do not have those biological urges satisfied
yeah.
by a family structure.
Gangs will do this. Mm-hmm. Gangs in the inner cities will do this. They will pick out a kid who's got a problem in their family, and they will provide for them a, the substitute. What's the other word for substitute? It's like a...
surrogate?
A surrogate family. The gang becomes a surrogate family for this youngster. And the gang will provide everything the youngster mm-hmm. needs. Companionship, protection, love, discipline, all the things that the individual desires deep inside to come from a family, the gang will mm-hmm. provide those. And at the same time, the gang will actually actively try to divide that family in
yep.
order to have more control over that individual, that young person. Cults will do this.
Mm-hmm.
Cults that attract, this was rampant in the late 60s and early 70s, a cult that wants to attract, say, 16 to 18-year-old runaways, the first thing they want to do is break them away from any ties to their family
yep.
and then begin supplying them a surrogate family within the cult. And that's exactly what the state
mm-hmm.
attempts to do. It attempts to, create a us and them between little groups. And then, you know, this is your team, and here's your people representing your team. And they're, you know, it doesn't matter that they say all these things and then don't do them.
Mm-hmm.
They're, for whatever bad they are, they're better than that other team.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing you want is that other team to get
control. When you've developed this into a mindset of the population,
mm-hmm.
it's very easy then to single out one group of the population and say, that's the bad guys.
Yeah, they're the one, it's their fault.
And the state has to do this because mm-hmm. as the state goes on doing what the state does, at
mm-hmm.
some point the state runs into this problem where there are too many people for the state to
mm-hmm.
be able to exist with that amount of people. And
yeah.
so they have to exterminate a group of people.
Yeah, and they have, and especially if one of those groups of people is not entirely subservient
mm-hmm.
to the state.
Now, sometimes they do this by saying, okay, well, this country on the complete other side of the world that no one has ever seen is a threat to us, and we're going to send a large population of our young men between the ages of, you know,
mm-hmm.
18 and 25 that are the most rebellious age of a young man's life,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to take them and we're going to send them over there and they're going to die.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's saying this group of our own population
mm-hmm.
is undesirable, and we're going to round them up and kill them.
Yeah, and I will predict within the next, I hate to put a time frame on it because the state is growing at such a rapid
mm-hmm.
rate. It's really hard to say, you know, how fast this thing is going to, as evil as it seems the state is today, it's just beginning.
Mm-hmm.
It's just getting rolling, you
mm-hmm.
know. But at some point in time, we have a segment of the population, they're vivid here to us in Ohio and Pennsylvania and Illinois, and that's the Amish.
Mm-hmm.
The Amish do not depend on the state. The Amish live a very peaceful life, and they do a lot of things without the permission of the state. Now, they try in every way to accommodate the state as
mm-hmm.
much as possible. But when it really gets down to the bottom line, if the state evaporated tomorrow, and if all of us non-Amish evaporated tomorrow, they would go right about their business like nothing ever happened,
mm-hmm.
Because they are entirely self-sufficient and independent,
mm-hmm.
and the state can't tolerate that. This cannot be allowed to continue,
mm-hmm.
because if the Amish can do it, pretty soon other people are going to say, well, why can't I do that?
Right.
And the state can't handle that. It's completely opposite of everything, of all the state mythology.
And the thing, I think that the state is practicing on the Amish because...
Well, they can't fight back.
Well, and nobody would notice.
Yeah, because they're not really in the public eye.
Exactly. You know, people think that the Amish are you know, well-known and everyone knows about the Amish. Well, they've only been that way for the last 20, 30 years. Prior to that, they were really not well-known at all. And so there's not a whole lot of attachment, you know, and there's not a lot of them.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a movie with Harrison Ford that really brought a lot of attention to the Amish, and a lot of people never heard of him before that. And then there was a TV show not long ago where they exposed a little bit of the lifestyle of the Amish. And but other than that, most people, you know, the Quaker is the same way. If you try, if you go to somebody who's not in the Pennsylvania, Ohio, Illinois, Indiana, someone who's not in that corridor, and you go to them and you say, "Do you know the difference between a Quaker and an Amish?" And they would be hard-pressed to tell you the difference. Well, here's the difference. The Amish, you know, live on their own. They dress in traditional clothing. They ride buggies. They shun modern conveniences. And there might be a Quaker walking along right beside you in the mall, and you couldn't tell the difference.
Right.
Because there's nothing about Quakers that would indicate anything like that. But most people have the vision of Quaker because they saw the oat box, you know, and so, you know, there's this confusion like that. Well, so this level of confusion has always existed about the Amish. They don't really know who those people are. They don't, it's not like they have a PR team, you know, they don't have somebody in Hollywood making sure that, that all the depictions of the Amish are correct or whatever, you know? So literally they can go in and hit one little farm over here and one little farm over there and one little farm over here, and they can continue doing this harassment, and very few people know that it's happening. Very small, you know, and what was their crime? He milked a cow. You know, oh no, I mean, literally he milked a cow and then he sold his milk. Oh, no.
That's
certainly reason to have a SWAT team hit his farm.
I think, and I think that they are practicing on the Amish so that they're testing the waters. They're seeing what people will tolerate. You know, will they tolerate us trumping up fake charges against these people?
And can, and what kind of slow indoctrination can we get people used to, so that when they see these things happening and we tell them,
Can we begin to disappear people?
Yeah, we're saving you from the evil salmonella. We're saving you from listeria. That's what's happening. These stupid Irish are spreading their diseases all over the place because they won't have the shots and they won't pasteurize their milk and they won't... What did I say?
Irish.
Did I say Irish?
You said Irish.
Oh, my.
A little bit of a difference there.
Amish. Yes, Amish, not Irish. Well, you know, brain damage. It's going, see, now, okay, I was just about to make a Freedom Fiends reference because they say worms. Are you familiar with this? They will just randomly, because they're hip-hopping, you know, they will randomly say the word worms. And we were saying, we were talking about brain worms like years ago. That was a that was an inside joke with us for like, what, 10 years or something? Just randomly look at each other and go, brain worms.
So, because we should probably start wrapping this up.
Yeah, it's about that time.
I just wanted to point out how funny it is that the fact that if you look right to the left of
my
you,
left,
your shadow appears on that wall, and it's really, if I'm just looking at your shadow, it's like I'm having a podcast with Lysander Spooner. Like, your shadow is exactly, you know, the profile picture of Lysander Spooner.
Maybe we should get a picture of that and put it on.
I've got my phone here. I can snap a picture of that. That's hysterical.
Let me get the angle better. How's that?
That's perfect. Let's see. My phone, it may be too dark to get it.
you're going to flash, and the flash will wipe out
It's too dark. I can't get it. I need a real phone.
Yeah.
But
the problem would be that the flash would take the picture away, take the shadow away.
But because we normally do this during the day.
Yeah.
And the light through the window mitigates that shadow when I don't see it. But
that's funny.
So anyway, that's totally neither here nor there.
The ghost of Lysander Spooner.
The ghost of today's podcast brought to you by the ghost of Lysander Spooner.
That's what we should name this. That would have nothing to do with the rest of the podcast. That is so. That's perfect. That people on Reddit will look at that and go, "I don't get it."
Google who Lysander Spooner is.
That was
from our last podcast.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, I don't know. Wrap it up. Yeah. I hope we've entertained you.
Yeah, you know.
There wasn't really a point to any of this, but I hope it was entertaining.
If it's not entertaining, what's the point anyway? Thanks a lot for listening to BadQuaker.com podcast. Be sure and get over to the website, which is BadQuaker.com, and interact over there. Leave us a message. Email me, Ben, at BadQuaker.com, or
me, Kai, that's K-I, at BadQuaker.com.
Thanks a lot, folks. Goodbye.
Bye.